Okay, topic of my talk is time dynamics and increase of entropy in finite system of interacting particles. And the basis is statistical theory based on the properties of chaotic eigenstates. Our traditional applications are small many-body systems like nuclei, complex atoms, ions, some spin systems. Recently we've got a new toy, which is very attractive toy. It's a model of quantum computer. It's attractive because it's much easier to deal with sigma matrices than a real interaction. Because before we deal with Coulomb or nuclear interaction, it's quite complicated. Here, my co-authors, it's on in a long list of works. Sushkov, Israelev, Grybakin, Vorov, Ponomarev, Kozlov, Grybakin, Akazati. And a very long list of references. Unfortunately, I was unable to present all of them. It's Shepelyansky, Altshuler, Geffen, Kamenev, Levitov, Silvestrov, Georgiot, and many, many, many others. Okay, interesting phenomena which appears in chaotic many-body systems. First is huge enhancement, chaos-induced enhancement of effects produced by weak interactions or any weak perturbations. I would like to say that quantum computer is not exception. As it was told by Dima Shepelyansky yesterday, he already checked that indeed quantum computer belongs to this family of chaotic many-body systems and indeed enhances weak perturbations. And the effect of enhancement of weak perturbations or weak interactions was confirmed by experiment. For example, huge, really huge enhancement of violation of parity was observed in nuclear reactions, a million times enhancement. It was predicted and observed and very intensively studied. Therefore, it's really existing effect. Another effect is chaos-induced enhancement of some reactions. For example, we considered enhancement of electron recombinations. But also time-dependent phenomena in finite system. It's, for example, unconventional decay law in finite system. Decay is not equal to, is not described by e to the minus gamma t. Another effect is exponential increase of wrong components. For example, in a closed quantum computer. Of course, it's a general effect. It's number of principal components increases with time exponentially. As e to the power of s, s is entropy of a system. And it's possible to calculate some critical time when exponential increase of number of wrong components starts. Epigraph to the work which I am going to discuss is the following. If you know eigenstates, we can calculate everything. Therefore, I start from discussion of the eigenstates. Maybe a lot of people know this, but I have to repeat briefly. Why we have chaos in many-body systems? Highly excited states in many-body systems are chaotic because density of states is really huge. For example, consider one shell in atom or one shell in nucleus. You have certain number of particles in this shell, say n particles, and certain number of orbitals in this shell. If you just calculate number of combinations, it's exponentially large, it's obviously. In spin system, it's even simpler. Number of states in spin systems is 2 to the power n, if spin is 1/2, because it's 2 power of n combinations. And all these states are distributed over small energy interval. It's about the same as single particle interval, several times bigger. Therefore, density of states becomes exponentially large because interval between the states is exponentially small. When you have residual interaction, which mixes with simple basis states, it's easy to estimate how many states will be mixed in equilibrium situation. Therefore, eigenstate is sum over basis states, against basis states of this type, or basis states in each particle sits on a certain orbital. C are expansion coefficients. One can calculate using, say, Fermi-Golden rule, the spreading width of one state. And number of states in a certain eigenstate, number of basis states, is spreading width over distance between the levels. How many levels are within these intervals? And this is exponentially large number, because d, interval between the many-body levels, is exponentially small. Approximately shape is Bright-Wigner or Lorentzian, but a real shape is more complicated. I'm going to discuss it. Now, something about real system, how it looks in practice. This is eigenstate, once a particular eigenstate of a cerium atom. It's expansion of eigenstate over simple configuration when each electron sits on a definite orbital. You see, this is each point here is particular coefficient of expansion. You see, this coefficient of expansion behaves like random variable with zero mean. To find distribution of these random variables, it's useful to calculate squared average value of a coefficient. And here we see smooth, nice form, something like Breit-Wigner distribution. If you have more close look, using logarithmic scale, the tail decays faster than Breit-Wigner distribution. But it's we are going to discuss next. What is the actual distribution of a component within eigenstates? It's important for future calculations of different observable parameters. Okay, our starting point. We have eigenstate with random variables as a components of these eigenstates. Distribution of these random variables is given by function, I call it f. It depends on energy of a component and energy of eigenstate. If we fix eigenstate, this function shows us distribution of a component. If we fix component and look how a certain basis component is distributed over eigenstate, this function shows us spreading of a component over eigenstates. It's obviously the same function. It's also convenient to introduce so-called strength function, or it's also called local density of states. It shows us energy distribution of a component. Because if you multiply f by density of states, you'll get this energy distribution of a component, or strength function. Strength function is described by this formula. I am not going to derive it, but it's possible to show. What actually determines energy dependence here? Energy dependence is determined by the energy dependence of a spreading width. Therefore, actually, what we need to calculate is energy dependence of a spreading width of a certain component. It's well known that near the threshold for low energy, it's power law. But it's not very well known that near the maximum, spreading width has Gaussian dependence. It's Gaussian function. I will only present the results. I don't have time to present derivations. This is just show that it's indeed correct. Gaussian function is indeed correct energy dependence for spreading width. It's comparison of analytical formula with some numerical calculations. Origin of this Gaussian dependence of a spreading width is in energy dependence of a density of final states. Component decays in the certain final states, and energy density of a final state is given by Gaussian function. Next point. When we have this nice ergodic distribution of a component, we need to have strong enough interaction. If interaction is weak, we don't have ergodic eigenstates. Ergodic eigenstates looks very ugly in this case. They are not simple and not complex enough to apply statistical theory. Therefore, let us try to understand the origin of this behavior. It's possible to derive formula for spreading width, energy dependence of spreading width, some equation. It's self-consistent equation. On the left-hand side of this formula, we have spreading width of particular basis component. Basis component is certain particles sit on certain orbitals or certain configuration of spins. It's a basis component of our consideration. On the right-hand side, we have a sum over basis components which are directly coupled to these particular components by interaction. H is here, HKP is non-diagonal matrix elements of Hamiltonian matrix. But on the right-hand side, we again have this spreading width. It's a set of self-consistent equations. How many important terms we have on the right-hand side? They are all located within spreading width. Yes, because when energy difference here is large, the component is far away, weight of this component is small. Therefore, typical number of terms on the right-hand side is spreading width divided by distance between these final states, which are directly coupled to initial states. If interaction is large, spreading width is large, and we have smooth energy dependence of the width. If we reduce interaction, we have only few terms on the right-hand side. Yes, and fluctuations of a width in energy dependence of a spreading width are inversely proportional to number of terms on this right-hand side. When interaction is so weak that spreading width is of order of a distance between the final states, we have 100% fluctuations. It means that spreading width is not a smooth function at all. You see, width of a particle is not a smooth function. It looks puzzling, but for many body states, it's a norm if interaction is small. We deal with a discrete spectrum. Therefore, spreading width behaves like that. It's not smooth function at all. And if interaction is even smaller, if this spreading width is smaller than distance between the levels, this equation has no solution. It's easy to show that left-hand side has different order of magnitude from the right-hand side. Therefore, solution just disappears. And this is non-ergodic regime. If you calculate spreading width according to Fermi-Golden rule, you see that condition of equilibrium distribution is equivalent to non-diagonal matrix element of interaction, which mixed different basis components, is bigger than distance between the levels. It's condition of equilibrium ergodic distribution. Now we can some preliminary conclusion about strength function and shape of eigenstates. We need it for further discussion. Therefore, if interaction is small, non-ergodic distribution of coefficients, you have huge holes in eigenstates, non-Gaussian fluctuation of the coefficients. But it does not mean that the state is simple. Still, number of principal components can be large. When spreading width is bigger than distance between the final states to which component can decay, or to which component can is coupled, we have some consistent or some ergodic distribution and well-defined strength function. It's possible to show that this expression for strength function describes a different situation of weak and strong interaction. Sigma here is in fact a band width of Hamiltonian matrix in the system. On the top you have Gaussian function, which originates from the spreading width. On the denominator you have Lorentzian function. Therefore, if band width of Hamiltonian matrix is bigger than spreading width, you have nice Breit-Wigner distribution. This is constant. If band width is smaller than gamma, you have Gaussian shape of eigenstates. Therefore, to conclude with eigenstates, it's the last page about eigenstates, we consider what happens to eigenstate as a function of strength of interaction. If interaction is infinitely small, we have simple eigenstates, one component and few perturbative mixings. If you go, interaction is bigger, we have complex non-ergodic eigenstates. Further increase of interaction give us Breit-Wigner shape of eigenstates, and then, for very strong interaction, we have Gaussian shape of eigenstates. Now we can apply this eigenstate theory to particular calculations. As everybody knows, a simple example of statistical physics is calculation of occupation numbers. But let us apply this theory to calculate occupation numbers for the orbitals, for example, electrons in atom, in finite many-body systems. If you know this function, c squared, coefficients c are distributed according to Gaussian formula, and f, this function, gives you variance of this distribution. Therefore, we write occupation number of a certain orbital s as sum over all configurations. F gives you weight of configuration and occupation number of certain orbital within certain configuration. It can be 0 or 1. Because in simple configuration, it's a 0 or 1. We can compare this distribution, which I call F distribution, with standard canonical distribution for system and thermal bath. What's the difference? It's closed small system and a thermal bath. For system and a thermal bath, weight of a component is given by a well-known exponential function, e to the minus energy over t, it's weight of a particular state. And occupation numbers are function of orbital energy and temperature. For example, Fermi-Dirac distribution, if interaction is small. In small isolated system, occupation numbers are described by different partition function, this function f, which is shape of eigenstate. It depends on energy of a system, energy of a component. And occupation numbers in finite system, finite closed system, will be function of total energy of a system and energy of orbital. Of course, in thermodynamic limits, these two distributions coincide, but it's not a topic of my talk today. I'm concentrate on small systems. Some examples, just to show how it works. If you have case of a strong central field, for example, multiply charged ion, it has strong central field. Distance between the levels is bigger than residual interaction between electrons. And this F distribution gives you smooth, nice function, which is similar to Fermi-Dirac distribution. Just coincide with Fermi-Dirac distribution. The difference is that it's closed system. Therefore, temperature in this system is some artificial parameter which can be found from self-consistency equation. Of course, it's not a general case. It's another simple example of occupation numbers. If you have strong interaction, again, real system, neutral cerium atom, here residual interaction is very strong, and occupation numbers has nothing to do with Fermi-Dirac, but still they are described as this F distribution. Therefore, again, if you know eigenstate, we can calculate occupation numbers, you can calculate mean value of any operator in the same way. More complicated problem is matrix elements and transition amplitudes between chaotic states. It's matrix elements is the main problem of quantum mechanics. How to calculate matrix elements between chaotic states, or transition amplitudes? Mean value is zero in this case, it's a random fluctuating variable. Therefore, we can calculate root mean value squared. Therefore, you have certain operator, for example, electromagnetic amplitude, dipole operator, matrix element between two states, compound states, I and J. It expresses a sum of single particle matrix elements, therefore it's single particle transitions, times occupation numbers, times function, which is convolution of two F. F distribution for initial state, F distribution for final state. Therefore, again, matrix elements between compound states in chaotic system are expressed in terms of a shape of eigenstates. This F function has width is about double width of energy of a component. In a similar way, you can calculate correlators of different operators. This is matrix element of operator on the top here, correlator of two different operators between the same states. You can check, are matrix elements correlated or not in the chaotic system. You can calculate two-body matrix elements and so on. To be more precise, I should say that any many-body system is a combination of regular dynamics and chaotic dynamics. For example, you have chaotic atom, but still electron interaction is screened, like screening in plasma. It's regular collective effect, screening of electron-electron interaction. Or other effects, giant resonances and nuclei. Regular dynamics can be separated from chaotic dynamics, because chaotic dynamics is within one shell. Regular dynamics corresponds to high energy transition, it's high virtual energy involved. Therefore, regular dynamics can be taken into account but using many-body theory method, and it reduces the renormalization of the parameters of a problem. Single particle energy, single particle matrix element, two-body matrix element, and so on. And after that, a problem is completely chaotic. Just example, I don't want to go into detail, just to show that this theory works. It's, again, results for real system. It's electromagnetic amplitudes, electric dipole amplitudes, in a real system in cerium atom. Amplitudes itself is normally distribution random variable. However, we can calculate amplitude squared, the probability of transition, and compare it with statistical theory. It perfectly agrees, experiment perfectly agrees with the statistical theory in this case. Now about enhancement of external perturbation, which was yesterday mentioned by Dimitri Shepelyansky. It's very easy to see the origin of enhancement. Why we have enhancement of weak perturbation in chaotic many-body systems? Because we have very small energy denominators. Yes? Very small energy denominators in comparison with simple systems. They're exponentially small. The answer is not so simple, because numerator is also exponentially small. Matrix element of a single particle operator, or two-body operator, between very complex compound state also tends to zero when the number of particles increases. But it's uncertainty of a type 0/0. But from this formula, it's not obvious, do we have enhancement of perturbation or not? We need to do one more step to understand the situation. Compare this expression with single particle system. For example, one particle moving in a central potential. Effect of some perturbation. You apply perturbation theory, calculate matrix element over energy denominator. Therefore, effect is single particle matrix element over typical single particle energy denominators. And for matrix element of operator, we have closure relation. We sum over all intermediate states and get mean value of operator squared. How many states are important here? Only few states. In any potential, there are only few states which saturate closure. Only few states. Let us do the same in a many-body system, in chaotic many-body systems. As we saw from a previous formula, huge number of intermediate states important in a closure, because all states nearby give about the same contribution. And the number of important states is very large, say n states. Therefore, each and this n is exponentially large, exponentially increased with the number of active particles. Therefore, each term in this sum is this term divided by n, because there are n important states. Therefore, each particular term, each particular matrix element between compound states behaves like single particle matrix element divided by square root n, where n is number of important terms, so number of principal components in the state. Interval between the levels is inversely proportional to n. You have complicated system, you have n important levels. N is exponentially large. If now see effect of weak perturbation. You have matrix element, which is suppressed square root n times, and we have denominator, which is suppressed n times. All together, we have this square root n enhancement, where n is complexity of a state, number of principal components in a state. Therefore, weak perturbation in a chaotic many-body systems are exponentially enhanced. We have accurate statistical theory. This was estimated some order of magnitude. We can calculate effect of weak perturbation accurately because we know how to calculate matrix elements. And as I told, this enhancement was observed in nuclei. They observed enhancement of parity violation in neutron nucleus reaction. In a simple system like proton-proton scattering, weak interaction effect is 10 to the minus 7. In compound nuclei, it's a million times bigger. Effect was observed and studied, and moreover, statistical theory was applied to this system, and strength of parity-violating nuclear interactions was extracted in many nuclei. It was comprehensive analysis involving a lot of nuclei, maybe first so detailed analysis of weak interaction in nuclei, and it was used using statistical theory. Another example of application of chaos is in atom. That was a long-standing puzzle for many years. Why recombination rate of electron with multiply charged ion is 200 times bigger than results of direct calculation? And again, it's explained by these chaotic compound resonances. If you apply statistical theory, you obtain results which is in agreement with experiment. Therefore, this chaos and chaotic compound states are responsible for enhancement of reactions in chaotic systems. And final point here about enhancement of weak perturbation. For example, you have quantum computer and you don't like this enhancement of weak perturbation. You want to get rid of it. How usually experimenters get rid of certain fluctuations? They do measurements many times. Yes? And results of measurements of random variables should be zero. I would like to say that in this case, it's not the case. Effect of weak perturbation is random variable. You do many measurements for many states, average, and result does not tend to zero. It's because of huge fluctuation. Distribution of this effect is not Gaussian. Actually, suppression of fluctuations when you do many measurements is the result of central limit theorem. Yes? And this effect does not obey simple central limit theorem because of it's inversely proportional to denominator between nearby levels. You have more measurements, it's more probable that you have a state with very close neighbor. You see, you just try, you do measurements one time, another time for different level and so on. And sooner or later you come to the case when there is very close level nearby. You have huge effect. Therefore, because of this fluctuation of denominator, result of measurement of random variable does not tend to zero. It's interesting case, and it's a relative of famous Levy flight in Brownian motion. Someone knows about this, it's the same reason. And final point about stationary states is that complete chaos is impossible. I always told about chaotic behavior of many-body states. But this chaos in many-body system is never complete. It's easy to understand why. Hamiltonian matrix is very strongly correlated. Hamiltonian matrix is very strongly correlated even for random interaction. It's a difference in the random matrix theory. Why? Because interaction is two-body interaction, or interaction between the spin, two spins is one spin flip. Interaction contains simple terms, for example, two-body interaction in many-body systems. How many independent matrix elements we have in many-body system? You have one particle on one orbital and can occupy m states, m orbitals. It's another particle, another orbital can occupy m state. And two final states. Therefore, number of independent matrix elements is smaller, it's not bigger at least, when m to the 4. Therefore, it's a power law. But size of a Hamiltonian matrix is exponentially large, as we know. Number of states is exponentially large. Therefore, we have huge Hamiltonian matrix with very strongly correlated matrix elements. And these correlations, which are deviation from random matrix theory, they're observable. Correlation in Hamiltonian matrix produces correlation in eigenvectors. For example, this average value of four coefficients, one from one eigenvector and another from another eigenvector, is not zero. Correlations in eigenstates produce correlations in observables. Again, only one example that these correlations are important. I mentioned calculation of transition amplitudes, for example, electromagnetic transitions. Let us consider contribution of one term. One single particle transition, one single particle matrix element into electromagnetic amplitude between two compound states, two chaotic compound states. This is result, smooth curve, result without correlations, and this result with correlations. Correlations very strongly modified strength function for transition. It suppresses tail and increases top. It can be shown analytically, but this is numerical picture. When you calculate real transition amplitudes, like what I showed in cerium atom, real probability of transition, it contains many single particle terms. Therefore, all these peaks are smoothed out. But the result is still visible. If you don't see any, if you don't have any correlations, it will be one giant resonance. If you take into account correlation, you will see some ears, some peaks, some gross structure in transition strength. And this is a result of correlations in the many-body systems. Therefore, you never have complete chaos in the many-body systems because number of independent parameters is smaller than the size of Hamiltonian matrix. Now I'm going to discuss time-dependent phenomena. Again, I have no time to derive the results in detail, but therefore I show some simple examples. Why decays of a many-body of an excited state, some certain basis state in the many-body system, is not simple exponential function. Excited many-body states, for example, these spin states in quantum computer. It's not a stationary state. Yes? If you have a system with initial condition and consider evolution of this state in time in a closed model of quantum computer, this state decays. Therefore, it means that there are many other components appear sooner or later. To consider probability to stay in the same state, you need to evaluate this function, which is Hamiltonian here, which is sum of coefficients squared times this exponential function. I just don't want to discuss how it's obtained, it's very simple. But the result is the following. Amplitude to remain in the same state is Fourier component of a strand function. But again, the result is reduced to the shape of eigenstates. Time dynamics is completely determined by the shape of eigenstates. We know shape of eigenstates. We can calculate this Fourier component. And we see interesting result. That in a finite system, decay initially is Gaussian. It's quadratic function of time. Delta E squared is in fact second moment of strand function. Then at larger times, it becomes simple exponential. But coefficient Q here is bigger than 1. When this transition happens, depends on interaction strength. If interaction is weak, this decay starts straight away. If interaction is strong, Gaussian decay is very long. You may never see simple exponential decay. That depends on the strength of interaction. It was some general formula. I may show, because it's quantum computer conference, quantum information conference, I just show example with quantum computer. It's particular example, it's just much simpler than many body system. You can have some quantum computer Hamiltonian of this type, which is like spins in magnetic field and spin-spin interaction, spin flip. In this case, it's easy to calculate this evolution operator. It's especially simple when interaction is large, when J is bigger than this term. In this case, evolution operator can be calculated analytically. Delta E squared, this second moment strength function, can be calculated analytically. It's proportional to number of qubits and number of neighbors. Amplitude to remain in the same state, again, can be calculated analytically. It's product of cosine with all interaction terms. For small time, you can expand cosine to the second order, and this general law appears. Therefore, again, quantum computer is no exception. It's just example of many body systems which obey the same law, if it is closed quantum computer. Few more minutes I spent on describe increase of entropy in this system. How entropy increases if you initially have simple state, problem with initial condition, what happens to entropy with time. I describe entropy by this formula. It's information or Shannon entropy. It's very convenient in this problem. It's W is just this C squared times ln of W. It's again probability of a component times ln of probability of a certain component. We can start from the eigenstate. We can calculate entropy of eigenstate in a many-body system. If you have eigenstate which contains number of principal component NPC, we can evaluate entropy using normalization condition. Because sum of all coefficients is 1, and you have NPC important coefficients, probability of each state is 1 over NPC, where NPC is number of components. Now we substitute this 1 over NPC under logarithm and use normalization condition, and easily find that entropy of eigenstate is just logarithm of number of principal components in this eigenstate. Or, in other words, number of principal components is e to the entropy. This is for stationary state. Now consider non-stationary problem. For non-stationary problem with initial condition, we have at time equal to 0, one component has probability 1, other components have probability 0. Therefore, entropy initially is 0, because it's 1, ln 1, ln 1 is 0. Let us consider very small times to start with, when we can take only one term in this expansion. You have other components populated according to this formula, first order in ht, because t is small. And it shows that initially only direct transitions are important. Therefore, only states which are coupled by one interaction are important. And if you have spin system, this number of states is qn. Q is number of n neighbors for each qubit, n is number of qubits. Therefore, number of states which are important in this sum is q times n. Therefore, in this initial time, we just make substitutions because it's trivial calculation. We can find that entropy increases like number of neighbors times number of qubits. g squared t squared a ln of 1 over g squared t squared. So it's kind of quadratic increase of entropy. But entropy is proportional to number of neighbors. What follows from this? What you called fidelity, or probability to stay in the same state, is still close to 1. But entropy is already large, because it's proportional. It actually, entropy comes from a small state, not from a main state. Main state contribution to entropy is small. This Qn just reflects how many states are populated in a small time. When we consider bigger times, situation is a little bit more complicated. For small time, each component which are directly connected have the same probability. For larger time, but some envelope is formed. Envelope, we can calculate probability of population of the other states, and it's again this Lorentzian type function which originates from the shape of eigenstates. Only components which are close to energy, to the initial state, are excited. Therefore, initially all of them are equal, then this envelope is formed with a weak gamma. What happens next? We have a cascade. It's a simple picture. First, we excite components which are directly coupled to initial state. Then we have second order interaction. Next chain, next family is excited. Then next family is excited, and so on. You can find some, you can write some simple differential equation for this cascade and calculate probability to be in a certain generation after a certain number of interactions. It's given by this formula. And what actually happens in this system? Initially only components which are directly coupled to initial state are excited. And when time increases, the probability to be in nth generation increases, and it achieves maximum when time is n, it's generation number times decay time. Tau is just decay time of an initial component. And these describe behavior of entropy. If you substitute this behavior into entropy, you see that entropy increases linearly with time. And this also increases linearly with time. Linear increase of entropy is because of this exponential increase of number of components in each class. Width of a state in a Fock space also increase linearly, but increase linearly on a different scale, because even first generation covers all available energy space. It does not cover it densely, but it covers all available energy space. Therefore, width of a packet in a Fock state saturates very quickly, and entropy increases slower, but it increases also increases linearly. Therefore, this is basically a picture of increase of entropy. You can mean quantum computer or many body system, it doesn't matter. Initially, increase of entropy is quadratic. After a certain critical time, when entropy becomes unity, it's easy to calculate this time, linear increase of entropy, and then saturation, and maximal entropy is entropy of eigenstates plus ln2. Therefore, it's a little bit bigger than entropy of eigenstates. This is time dependence of entropy in the many body systems. Critical time when entropy increases, that entropy is 1, is inversely proportional to number of qubits and ln of number of its qubits, therefore n ln n. And after this critical time, number of wrong components in quantum computer will increase exponentially. This is kind of theoretical consideration. We did numerical experiments to show that this picture works. Indeed, width of a wave packet in Fock space immediately saturated, increases linearly, immediately saturated. It's saturated on the time of the first generation. Entropy, this is number of principal components. It increases more slowly. This is theoretical curve. This is result of numerical calculation. We also calculated inverse participation ratio, but it's not important. And what is interesting here? It's well known that in usual space you have reflection of wave packet if you have some boundaries. In this is behavior of wave packet in the Fock space, in the space of a basis components. Here there is also reflection phenomena. If packet spread and reaches the boundaries, energy boundaries determined by the width for this wave packet, there is reflection. You can see certain oscillations when in transition to equilibrium. Similar method can be applied to calculation of observable, for example, to calculation of occupation numbers. Again, this dot shows theoretical curves, and this evolution of occupation numbers with time in many body systems. Initially, occupation numbers, initially we have one component which contains certain orbitals occupied, certain orbitals are empty. We consider a case in the middle of a spectrum when temperature is infinite, for simplicity. Therefore, final numbers are all the same. And you see that if interaction is not very large, it's a case of Breit-Wigner shape of eigenstate, when interaction is not very large, you have oscillation in transition into equilibrium. When residual interaction is strong, again, we can calculate evolution of occupation numbers. And in the case of strong interaction, equilibrium is very fast and it's monotonic, like damp oscillator. If you have large damping, you have no oscillation, immediately transition to equilibrium. If you have weak residual interaction, transition to equilibrium is small and is accompanied by oscillations. Therefore, this is conclusion. Therefore, our game is game with many body systems. When I speak about quantum computer, it's a model of quantum computer. It's closed quantum computer. It's not a real system. It's just a convenient model. But nevertheless, this model obeys a general law for all many body systems. Therefore, statistical theory, which I told about, describes shape of eigenstates and transition from Breit-Wigner's shape to Gaussian shape. You can formulate criterion of equilibrium, or ergodicity, when you have completely filled eigenstates, and when they obey simple statistical theory, when you have Gaussian law of coefficients, and so on. Shape of eigenstates plays a role of partition function, which you can use in a statistical physics calculation. You can calculate occupation numbers in finite systems, the mean values of spins in quantum computer, if you wish. We can calculate matrix element and transition amplitudes between chaotic states. We can calculate with effect of enhancement of weak interactions and enhancement of reactions in chaotic states. There is difference between many body systems, in even chaotic many body systems, and random matrix theory. There are certain correlations due to two-body nature of interaction. And correlation, resonance, and transition strength, which are, again, due to correlation in Hamiltonian matrix. And there are certain deviations from a simple random matrix theory. Finite many-body systems have non-conventional decay law. It varies from Gaussian to exponential depending on the strength of residual interaction. We can find increase of entropy in finite many-body systems, exponential increase of number of principal components with time, and energy width of wave packet, and so on. We can apply this to calculation of observable like occupation numbers or transition of different operators to equilibrium, to different mean values of operators to equilibrium. This is all what I wanted to say today.
We have time for perhaps one question.
I did not completely get from you where the randomness was coming from. You have rules by which you construct the basis state. So for example, for a spin system, unless there was something in randomness of interactions or
It's a dynamical, normally it's dynamical chaos. But see, spin system is something which we actually started to study. We don't know how this quantum computer will look. But we know how atoms look. We can plot distribution of matrix elements of residual Coulomb interaction for real system, and we did it. Or for nuclear physics, also people also did it. And if you just plot distribution of matrix element Hamiltonian matrix, they look like random distribution. Again, They are not assumed to be random. You calculate them and plot them. And it looks like random distribution is certain maximum and exponential tails. You can see, say that it's a cause of randomness, but again, it's a dynamical chaos. If you have complicated system, you have many different matrix elements, and this is a source of chaos.
It's a complexity.
It's a complexity. It's, yes, you're right. Maybe it's just complexity. But this complexity allows us to apply statistical theory. I consider the application of chaos, actually.
Well, I think we better thank the speaker again and close the session.
Okay. Maybe because my talk is the last one, I must thank organizers for great job, and I hope you join me.